Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Transforming Aging Summit, featuring leaders whose wisdom and work are transforming the face of aging in today's world. I'm your host, Ron Pevney, and we're delighted that you're joining us for this session with our special guest, Richard Leiter. The theme of this session with Richard is the power of purpose. Now, Richard's the founder of Inventure, the Purpose Company. He's a highly respected executive life coach, the author of many books, including Repacking Your Bags, The Power of Purpose, Life Reimagined, and most recently, Work Reimagined, Uncover Your Calling. Richard's work is featured regularly in many media sources, including PBS and NPR. So Richard, we're honored you're joining us today. And when many of us, including myself, reflect on what it means to live healthy, vital lives, we think of you and your powerful teachings about purpose. So thank you very much for being here.
Well, thanks. It's a privilege to be back, and I'm honored. So looking forward to it.
So Richard, let's begin by defining what we're talking about. And so many books and articles on aging well, and even more broadly on living well, use the terms purpose or calling or meaning. And you're known for your work with purpose, yet your most recent book is called Work Reimagined, Uncover Your Calling. So can you tell us how you define purpose, and is purpose the same thing as calling? Is it the same thing as meaning?
Those are three distinctly different words to me in the same space. And so let's start with purpose. Purpose is, the way I define it, is your aim or direction. And I think you define it yourself similarly, and you know, when you look at what you aim for as you age. So purpose is different than goals, it's different than other things. It's your trajectory or your aim, and it's really a mindset. And it's the answer to the question, what makes you want to get out of bed in the morning, ultimately? That's kind of the practical, down-on-the-ground question. Why do you get up in the morning, and what makes you want to get out of bed, and what is your aim for the day, your aim ultimately for your life? And calling is the vocational expression of purpose. To me, there are jobs, there are careers, and there are callings. A job makes money, pays the bills. A career pays the bills and also gives us a perhaps growth and status. But a calling really maximizes our gifts, our passions, and our values. It puts those three things together. So calling is the inner urge to use your gifts on things you genuinely care about in environments that value you, that are healthy for you. So purposeful work is work that fits that formula of gifts, passions, and values. The third word you asked about is meaning. And meaning is the result of doing purposeful things and purposeful work. We find meaning through those are experiences we find through the expression of our purpose and our calling. So I'll stop there because hopefully that was clear, but if not, you can help me clarify it.
No, that is helpful to me. Thank you for that clarification. You know, I think many of us, and at times I've gotten hung up on this myself, when we think of purpose, we think of being aware of a grand design or a large vision for our lives, you know, the umbrella vision of what our lives are about. And if we don't have such a vision, we somehow feel that we're missing the boat. And your books are, I know, are informed by many interviews that you've done with people as they age about purpose. And so I'm wondering, do many people get, you know, a sense of this grand design, or is purpose something that's more subtle and that it tends to reveal itself in much smaller increments to most people?
Well, I think it's a great question, and it's a question of the ages, but it's both. So here's what I would say, first of all, that I give people a default purpose. So purpose is it a grand design or is, you know, what is it exactly? And I say, well, let me just give you the, and I'll call it the rather than a, default purpose to work with this week. And then this will inform what your purpose is. By the end of the week, you'll know and be able to language it in your own words. And it's only two words, grow and give. So I tell people, put on a mirror, a post-it, and put the words grow and give. And in the morning, when you're brushing your teeth and you're waking up in the morning, getting up, ask yourself, how am I going to grow and give today? Because that's the essence. That's the universal essence of almost all research and writing on purpose today, in my humble observation. We need to keep growing as and maturing in order to have something to give and to be awake and to be conscious, and we need to give. So purpose is always about growing, and it's always about giving. It's always larger than and outside yourself. And so at the end of the day, I ask people now, as you're brushing your teeth before you go to bed, look at that post-it and ask yourself, how did I grow and how did I give today? And this will be a mindset exam or check. And at the end of 1 week, see what has transpired. And people will often say, ah, I got it. I understand now that if I faced every day and every nuance or transaction that day as a choice, whether to grow or give or both, all of a sudden that's the mindset that purpose is based on. And I said, that's exactly right. That's as simple as it is. Sometimes people get that grand revelation through tragedy or triggering event or some breakdown or breakthrough in their lives. Sometimes I always say, Ron, that we're both pushed by pain and pulled by possibility. And so sometimes we find our purpose when we're pushed by pain, and we figure out what really matters in our lives, and we start to dedicate ourselves to that. And sometimes that's a cause, but you don't need a cause. So pushed by pain can bring us to a cause. But I think that's one of the three great myths about purpose. Now, the first myth is that you have to have a cause. No. You have to have a mindset. You have to have a daily mindset that you want your life to matter and you're going to make a difference in one person's life today. That's the grow or give thing. The second myth is that purpose will be revealed to you if you just wait long enough and God will whisper in your ear or you'll get a revelation, which can happen. People can go with you on a vision quest and get a revelation. I'm not saying revelation can't happen, but unless we work on it, it doesn't happen. And so the way it's revealed, purpose is revealed to us, is by action. Act first, reflect second. And that's getting back to that default purpose again. If you act purposefully, it shows up in life, and that mindset becomes clearer. And the third myth is that purpose is a luxury. And that's the one that I've really pounded on the hardest throughout my 4 decades of saying, not only is it not a luxury, but purpose, and not for just the affluent or the aged or the educated, purpose is fundamental to who we are as human beings. It's fundamental to our health. It's fundamental to our longevity, to our happiness, and even ultimately to our productivity and creativity. And so when I came out this year with the all-new third edition of The Power of Purpose, which is kind of my seminal book on this, why did I need to write a third edition? And PBS did a special on this third edition that just came out this last month. But the reason I needed to do this was because I had matured in my understanding of purpose, and I wanted the book to reflect that maturity. And the final chapter of the book is the one the media is really all over, and the chapter is entitled, Ron, Can Science Explain Purpose? And I've spent time in the last few years, in neuroscience labs, talking to medical people and neurologists and scientists and looking at how this purposeful mindset affects longevity, health, healing, and all these other things. And there's no question now, science can prove that purpose is fundamental. So kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but I think it really is fundamental, and we need to realize it as such.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. And you said we're pushed by pain, and what was the second part
The second one is pulled by possibility.
Pulled by possibility.
Yeah, sometimes we're at a point in our life where, you know, we're going along smoothly and things, but there's got to be more. You know, is the old midlife crisis question, is that all there is,
yeah,
or is this all there is? And what are the possibilities? What else is out there for me in all kinds of ways, personal growth as well as, you know, other outer things? So sometimes we find purpose by being seekers, by being pulled by possibility.
You know, when I think of purpose, and I know that on the retreats that I offer, this theme certainly assumes a major role.
Yep.
One thing I often hear from people, and this is especially true with people who have served others throughout their lives,
mm-hmm,
you know, had careers that are stressful, that are service-oriented, and they say that they're really struggling because they want their lives to be free of having to be of service to others after they retire.
Mm-hmm.
They want to finally have the opportunity to do what they enjoy, to pursue interests they haven't had time to pursue, just to really savor each moment without a lot of goals or a lot of internal shoulds. And
yep,
I guess I'm wondering, when this is really a strong dynamic in somebody, is that, as you see it, is that enough of a purpose to provide meaning and all the benefits of purpose in one's life? Or does one have to, even in the context I just described, does one have to be focused on somehow serving?
Well, I would say, first of all, I always tell people who are in that conversation like that to take a moratorium and just savor. You remember E.B. White had this quote that said, "I arise in the morning torn between a desire to save the world and a desire to savor the world. This makes it hard to plan the day." Well, in deference to E.B. White, I think it makes it easier to plan the day, because a well-lived, balanced life is about saving and savoring, not literally saving the world, but metaphorically giving. And so I respect tell them to take a savoring moratorium and just savor. Do all the things you love. Travel, pay attention. But they'll find that it becomes very individualistic after a while, and maybe even narcissistic. But we live in community. The only way we've survived as a species is in community. We're tribal animals, and so purpose is not about new goals, new causes. It's about a mindset of presence when you're with other people. Is this about me exclusively, or is it about you, or about both of us? And I think it's about both of us. And that presence, if you're in the presence of somebody where it's all about them and all about their savoring and where they've traveled and what they've done, and it's a drag. And you want to be around people who are interesting but also interested, who care and cure both. And so, you know, I've been going to Africa doing outdoor adventure-type retreats like you have for many, many years, and I tell a story about the hunter-gatherers in East Africa in Tanzania, the Hadza tribe, H-A-D-Z-A, if people want to Google it. The Hadza tribe's been around 100,000 years, And the only way that they have survived is through collaboration and cooperation, through purpose, actually, not through competition. And so in meeting with elders around the fire in Tanzania, and I'll be over there in a couple weeks, by the way, and I've been going there for three decades every year, I find that they're among the most studied people today as they call them the original people, our ancestors. Well, how did they survive 75 to 100,000 years? It's through purposeful collaboration and cooperation. That doesn't mean every day you're out serving everybody, but you're playing your part in the community, whatever age and stage, including the elders. And so I think part of what makes us human is purpose. It's playing our part in community, not individualistically pulling back from that. So I think we need relief from that, a moratorium perhaps, but I think the balance of saving and savoring is what we're talking about. Does that help?
Oh, that does help. And I, the way I understand that, Richard, is that if we are at all conscious and seeking to grow in our consciousness and awareness of who we are and what goes on in us, that we will find that balance. And there will be times when we really need the savoring, but there will be other times then that will arise, you know, very organically, when what we really know we need to do is somehow be serving. And I think that we can trust that that balance is there if we just stay open and aware.
I agree. And it does demand a practice, I believe, a consciousness, as you say, a conscious choice, that in every transaction I do have a choice. Is it about me or is it about you or about both of us, and to be present or not present? And so I think there are certain practices that help us. You know, purpose is a choice, but it's also a practice. And so the practice of purpose is what really eventually, you know, the old adage that says knowledge is only rumor until it's in the muscle. And I think practice helps us put purpose in the muscle, so we don't have to say, oh, I guess I should be, as you said earlier, I should be giving. It's just a natural instinct to do that. It's in the muscle because it feels good and it's healthy and it's the right thing to do.
Well, when you were speaking a moment ago about some of your learnings from the Hazda in Tanzania, you spoke about how they realize the importance of everybody making their contribution to the community.
Right.
And I think there are so many people in today's world who, when they reach retirement age, and I think especially it's the case that if and when they retire, perhaps because of the disempowering messages that surround us, that there really isn't a role for the elder, they have no idea how they can really make a meaningful contribution, what their particular gift is at this point in their lives that can contribute to the well-being of the greater whole. You know, they don't have a sense of their purpose on any level, whether it's a big macro vision or whether it's micro ways of really being of service. And can you speak to, for people in that situation, of which I think there are many, how they can begin to approach finding their purpose, finding their gifts to give?
Well, the formula that I spoke of a bit earlier is the core for me, what I've researched over all this period of time. And I call it the napkin test. And often when people know what I do or hear what I do, they'll say, "You got a minute? Can you tell me what I should do with the rest of my life, particularly after retirement or at different times of transition in life?" I said, "Well, if you've only got a minute," because as you and I both know, people today are suffering it, even in retirement, from busyness, hurry sickness, always going, always keeping busy. But busy about what? You know, ants are busy. What are they really busy about? Is it something they really care about? So I said, well, if you only got a minute, write this formula down on a napkin. That's why I call it the napkin test. And the formula is gifts plus passions plus values equals calling. And so I said, you have to know thyself's been around a long time, but know thyself, what are your gifts? What are the things you really love doing and would love doing more of? And your hand turns to it naturally. It's not, you don't have to do it because you're getting paid to do it or because that's what your degree is in or your background. What are the things you really love to do? So, you know, I have an exercise called calling cards that I just wrote a whole book about. Work Reimagined is about this formula, basically. And oftentimes people, you know, some 18-year-old kid made a decision about their career. They didn't really make a choice really about their career in terms of gifts, passions, and values. They kind of got into something because a parent or an advisor said, oh, you'll be good at this, or I'll pay for this education for you to do this, but I won't pay for that. And so people ended up doing okay, but not really being that fulfilled in their work. And we all know the statistics on fulfillment are abysmal. You know, it's about 1 out of 5 people today wants to get up and go to work every day. 4 out of 5 don't. Mm. Well, part of it is not the fault of the work environment. A big part of it is it's a bad fit for who they are, and they never made a choice, a real conscious, clear choice based on gifts, passions, and values in the first place. So with the formula, and then the second is passions. Well, what are you really interested in? One of the things that really drives clarity about purpose is curiosity. When people are really curious about things, they tend to want to get up and learn more about it, that grow part of the, what I talked about earlier, of grow and give. And it keeps them up at night because they're interested in it and they're studying it or reading about it or talking to people about it. So passions is an imperative with figuring out what's next. And then values. Values are, how do you like to operate in the world? Do you want to be part of an organization? Do you want to operate on your own? Do you want to volunteer? You know, what kind of community or organization or not do you want to bring your gifts, passions to life in? So those are the three questions, and they're always changing, they're always evolving, they're always difficult for people, but they are fundamental, and we've done a lot of research on this. So a big part of my work is helping people answer those three questions and answer that napkin test, that formula, in ways that make sense to them depending on their stage of life.
Well, I'm wondering about one other dimension, Richard. You know, a lot of the work that I do involves taking people on retreats.
Yep.
Our aim is to help people get in touch with, I guess the kind of terms we use are inner guidance,
mm-hmm.
you know, or soul guidance, or, you know, the terms don't matter that much. But
yep.
it's getting in touch with the spiritual dimension of oneself as a way of helping to gain more clarity about gifts and values and passions. And I guess I'd like to ask you, what do you see as the role of spirituality in this process of finding one's purpose?
Well, it's a great question, and by the way, one of the chapters in the new third edition of The Power of Purpose is called The 24-Hour Purpose Retreat, and I give people the tools to go on retreat themselves, not out to the bush necessarily, but out to, you know, into themselves by giving them a mental model and some questions and some tools to take a solo. You know, I've been I got to Africa, met those hunter-gatherers and other tribes through being on the board of Outward Bound originally. And I went over to climb Kilimanjaro with a board of trustees and visit the African Outward Bound School and ended up falling in love with Africa and East Africa in particular. But, you know, every Outward Bound school in the world, of which there are 88 schools, does a solo a retreat where you go minimally 24 hours, often much three times that length, 3 days, into a solo experience. And so solo retreat is an important part of the purpose process. So when people ask me, is purpose spiritual? I say, well, of course. It's mysterious. I mean, it's inside us waiting to be uncovered or tapped. And so, you know, from birth onward, we're all growing older, but we're also growing up or maturing spiritually. You know, I always say aging belongs to the body and maturing belongs to the spirit. So aging requires nothing special from us. We're aging from the minute we're born.
Uh-huh.
But maturing requires a spiritual path or practice. And so for me, purpose is spiritual wisdom embodied. And there's all kinds of ways to get at it. But even the term spiritual comes loaded with cultural baggage. Using the term becomes immediately suspect for many. And the debate between science and spirit comes from, there's baggage on both sides. But science and spirituality validate the necessity of one another. You know, when I wrote about Can Science Explain Purpose, it's interesting how that debate rages, but is increasingly now clear, whether it's integrated medicine or whatever is going on in the neuroscience labs, but the struggle to blend the spiritual and the scientific has been addressed with varying degrees of sensitivity by some, you know, history's greatest minds are still talking about it.
Yeah.
So I like the notion of spiritual maturity, and I think we do have to push the pause button, whether it's on our own 24-hour retreat or on a retreat like you would take them on or I might take them on, and to let us know that, you know, when we age with conscious choice, we can walk the path of purpose and we can grow whole, mature, and wise. And I think that's the key in the second half of life with conscious aging, is to grow whole, not old. We're already growing old, but to grow whole, that's a choice and a practice.
Yeah. And as I see it, and I think you see it, that's the difference between becoming a true elder or just becoming somebody who's old.
Right.
You know, I think for a long time, in my work and my perspective, I tended to focus perhaps a bit in an unbalanced way on inner reflection and spiritual work as a key to finding one's sense of purpose or
mm-hmm.
Their gifts. And a real important contribution that I think you made in your book, Life Reimagined, was helping me and others see that while that connection with inner guidance is important, oftentimes we learn about our gifts and our values and our passions by getting out and trying things.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed how many people don't have a sense of what their real gifts are or what their passions
yeah.
are. As they age, they think I've lost all passion. And your contribution was helping people see, hey, it's okay just to go try this, try that, and then be reflective enough to see how it feels, what's going on inside of you, as a really important key. And so I really thank you for that contribution to me.
Well, you're welcome. And I think the choice is to, or a choice, I should say, is to act and reflect. It's not either or, but it's oftentimes we think reflect first and that'll lead to the action. But I think it's true that acting by exploring inner and outer, but exploring outer, let's say, leads to reflection. But you do need to reflect. And I do believe you need community to do it. You need, I say in Life Reimagined, the book, we say there are six practices or six core steps: reflect, connect, explore, choose, repack, and act. Now, you can start wherever you are, but all six are essential. So reflection is essential. Often that's the first practice, but a lot of people, particularly men, aren't particularly reflective and would rather act. And so they'll start with explore and then reflect. And not to pick on men, but because we're both men on this call at the moment, you and I talking, the explorer needs to then connect with somebody. So the second practice is connect. And so going it alone is an incredibly bad idea. I think the biggest thing that I'm talking about these days and getting deep resonance on is the notion that isolation is fatal. Going it alone is an incredibly bad idea. So even if I'm on retreat, going solo, coming out of that, there's a necessity to come back into community in certain ways, to come back into conversation, to come back into clarifying that hero's journey with others. And so I think all six of those practices are important, but I find a lot of people, and it could be women, it doesn't have to be men, who would find it okay to explore, maybe even repack first, to start to say, I need to let go of certain things and stop certain things before I can look at my purpose. I need to repack and unpack my bag and drop certain things I'm doing now. So the key is to start where you are. And for some people, reflect is where they can do that, and others need to start with explore or act.
Richard, time is really, really flying, and there's something I'm dying to ask you in the few moments we have left.
Mm-hmm.
You're in your early 70s now.
Yep.
And you've been writing and teaching about purpose for several decades. And I'd like to ask you, what do you understand about purpose and about aging now that you didn't understand 20 or 30 years ago?
Well, we've talked a little bit about it. But I would go back to that chapter that I labored over for months, Can Science Explain Purpose? And one of the neuroscientists, his name is, he's a neurologist from Johns Hopkins University, his name is Dr. Majid Fatui, wrote How to Boost Your Brain and a lot of things about brain health and brain science. And in a conversation with Dr. Fatui, he says, Richard, I believe that purpose is fundamental to brain health. And I've written about it and da-da-da. And he said this. He said, so I'm going to say this to you and to the audience that might be listening to this. Imagine, or can you imagine, but imagine a pill that would improve or let's say reduce cognitive decline, like dementia or Alzheimer's, by 30 to 40%. That same pill would reduce macroscopic stroke incidence by as much as 40%, would improve sleep and decrease sleep apnea, and would increase longevity by as little or as much as 7 years. How much would you pay? Would you be willing to buy that pill, and how much would you pay for it? And most people say, wow, if there's a pill like that, I'd certainly figure out a way to pay for it. And Dr. Fatui said, well, that pill is available right now, and it's free. And it's called Purpose. And so when we delve into the science of purpose, and we look at the hippocampus, that part of the brain where a lot of that activity takes place, in the middle of the brain, that little piece in the middle of the brain that actually expands with aging if there's purposeful giving and growing going on. Not just giving and growing, purposeful giving and growing. And he said, the day will come soon when your doctor is going to prescribe purpose as part of your regimen, not just exercise and diet and staying active, but staying active about things that matter to you. Because we're now able to measure in the brain and through autopsies and other things like this where this really makes an impact. So I was so taken by this, I wrote a whole chapter and acknowledged all kinds of this research. So that would be my answer, is that I have been validated. I've always been on the spiritual, psychological, philosophical path. But now the neuroscience and the science and the medical is backing up that this is true and this is right. So that's the big breakthrough for me.
Wow. How about just briefly aging in general and not purpose in particular? Now that you're up there in your elder chapters, what do you understand about aging that perhaps you didn't, you weren't aware of, or you weren't fully cognizant of 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wrote a book a number of years back. I don't even know how many years. It's still out there, called Claiming Your Place at the Fire.
Yes.
And about aging and about the second half of life. And why fire was because I noticed in tribes in Africa that the wisest of the elders sat the closest to the fire. So I was always very curious about how, in our society, where would I sit? Would I be close to the fire, and how would I know that? Or in my own life, in my own community, who are the wise elders that would sit close to the fire? And who are the ones that wouldn't? We all know old fools, people who haven't matured much. They've aged, but they haven't matured. And so, you know, as I looked at this new phase of life that I'm in, you know, where we've added 3-plus decades to life that we didn't have before, and I don't know how long I'm going to live. I did 3 eulogies this last 6 months. People who are about my age, who are friends of mine, and who none of them actually expected to die. I mean, they were all... And so I look at aging, and I look at the choice of claiming your place at the fire, and I do believe that what I've learned is that this whole purpose thing is really fundamental. But I also am more and more convinced that tribe is the other element. The two parts to vital conscious aging are purpose and tribe. Who, not only what you do, but who you do it with. And so increasingly, I look in my own life at tribe, meaning community, friends, family, colleagues, and having the courage to end certain relationships that no longer are really serving either of us, but that are kind of historic. And that doesn't mean all of a sudden ditching friends, been around, but there are people who I just don't enjoy spending time. When it comes to grow and give, it's just not happening.
Yeah, they're not kindred spirits anymore.
Yeah, and so increasingly finding tribe. I know so many people are looking at their living circumstance in this phase of life like I'm in. And they start with where they're going to live. But the key question is really, who are you going to live with and around? And so, you know, the whole co-housing movement and cooperative housing and everything, you know, a lot of it's about the structure, but I think that this tribe thing is huge. And isolation is fatal without tribe. And having the courage to really step forward and create a new tribe in this new phase of life, and end certain relationships and begin others, I think is the bookend purpose.
And I think throughout the summit, we're going to be hearing a lot in different ways about that theme, about the vital importance of community. Richard, in our last minute, I'd like to give you an opportunity to tell our listeners a little bit about the PBS piece, The Power of Purpose, that you did. What would you say about it, and how might people have an opportunity to be able to witness that?
Well, PBS is public television, no matter what city you live in. Assuming you have public TV, you could you could find this. But I was approached almost a year ago to today by PBS in Washington, D.C. They wanted to do something on purpose, and they picked me. They'd vetted me, my books, my YouTubes, and all this stuff, and could I meet? And so we met, and I was floored at how wise they were in their study of the purpose message and how much they knew that purpose wanted to be out there in the public domain in a practical way. And so I agreed, and we filmed the PBS special called The Power of Purpose in July. And what was interesting was when PBS does a TV program, there's a live audience. You do it before a live audience. And they need 200 people that represent their cohort. Well, within 4 hours, they had 400 people sign up to be part of this. And the day that we filmed on July 13th, 500 people lined up 2 hours in advance to get into the studio. And they said, "Oh my gosh, we didn't know you were that well known." And I said, "I'm not. I mean, I'm known to certain readers, et cetera, but this purpose is a huge message that a lot of people have a hunger for." And so we filmed it, and it's a pledge-type special, like you might see the late Wayne Dyer or Deepak Chopra or others doing, and then they break and say that you can get a video of the show and a book and other things, you know, at certain levels. And it was shown last month in December during the PBS year-end pledge drive 800 times across the country. So that means in cities they would show it sometimes 4, 5, 10 times, different hours, different times. It'll be shown throughout 2016 as part of the March pledge drive and the August pledge drive in these cities across the country, after which it'll then be offered as part of the PBS catalog where you can just order it. But if you go to your website, your public TV program, and put in The Power of Purpose, or my name, Richard Leiter, see if they're showing it and when they're showing it in your town.
Richard,
I learned a lot, Ron. It was an amazing experience to really tighten up a message. It's like 3 TED Talks in a row. Very tight message. And I took people through those 6 practices I talked about with stories and live audience and TV, and I really learned a lot about communicating the purpose message.
Well, I look forward to seeing that, Richard. Richard, I thank you for sharing your wisdom with us today. I wish you and I wish your good work well, and it is my sincere hope and prayer that we all live with a commitment to more purpose-infused lives. So thank you very much.
Well, I agree, and I thank you so much for the way you do an interview, Ron. Is really gracious in the way that you allow someone like me to really share what they are feeling passionate about. So best with the Transforming Aging Summit. I'm a fan and a supporter, and thanks again for the privilege of being part of it.
Thank you, Richard.
Okay.
And to all of you who are listening to this interview, thank you for being here. What a wonderful session with Richard Leiter, and we invite you to listen to the other interviews in the Transforming Aging Summit.